want to be?
To be or not to be? To be or not to be?
That is the question as posed by Laurence Olivier, Kenneth Branagh, and Ethan Hawke in various film adaptations of Hamlet. But those movies, along with this week's Ophelia, are just a few of the many on-screen versions of Shakespeare's plays. In addition to being the most famous playwright of all time, Shakespeare may very well be the most prolific screenwriter of all time. According to our count, he's credited as a writer on more than 1,400 IMDb.com projects, and of those, more than 400 are feature films. And with us to discuss some of the most iconic Shakespeare movies is Robert Watson. He is a distinguished professor of English. I don't want to say that better. If it's, I'm talking about English, I should pronounce professor, right? Distinguished professor of English at UCLA and a Shakespeare scholar. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's say there's a limit to the amount of Shakespeare you can consume and you haven't been to the theater to see some good Shakespeare movies or gone to Netflix. What are, in your mind, the must-see adaptations?
So there's some that are very easy to get at. The Midsummer Night's Dream with Kevin Kline is charming. Much Ado About Nothing that Kenneth Branagh did is very charming. But I think there are also more challenging versions that are rewarding. I often recommend that people look at Kenneth Branagh's Henry V, which takes a history play, which would seem to be a little less juicy for people, and turns it into a really compelling understanding, not just of the politics that are going on in that period, but why they look like politics that we still face today.
One of the things that I think is often a challenge of adapting Shakespeare is depending on how quickly the actors are performing a play and how much has been redacted for speed. You know, a Shakespeare play can run 3.5 hours long. So when you're adapting a film, you're necessarily making a lot of cuts. And also, if you're being faithful to the material, you're doing it in iambic pentameter. For film audiences, what are the obstacles for them to get engaged in the story, and what do filmmakers need to do to make the story accessible to somebody who doesn't know the history and doesn't know the language as well?
Yeah, so that's always going to be a struggle, but it seems to me there are opportunities to use visual cues to let people see what kinds of transactions are going on between people. So the language isn't really – most of the successful adaptations I've seen are perfectly willing to let the language stay as it is, but to give visual reinforcements for it. I think some of the risks that come with that, though, are that it gets too easy to give the visual reinforcements to make things literal, to make them look realistic, whereas Shakespeare was working in a kind of metaphorical mode.
You talked about Kenneth Branagh and his Henry V. I'm going to ask you about Akira Kurosawa, who has also adapted Shakespeare multiple times, as has Orson Welles. So when you think about iconic directors and how they have done with Shakespeare, what are the kinds of movies that you think have succeeded well?
Right. So Throne of Blood is a personal favorite of mine. I think it's a fantastic version of Macbeth. It's compelling. It captures the deeper levels of the play, even though it can't have any of that language in it because it's in Japanese. The subtitles are sometimes a little bit comic for the famous So Fair and Foul a Day I've Not Seen. It just says, such weather, and you're supposed to go from there. But I think that's one of the really extraordinary successes of transforming Shakespeare into another mode and yet having it come through with real power.
And there are obviously some plays that are harder to adapt. And I think you cite As You Like It and The Winter's Tale. Is that because they haven't been married to the right filmmakers or because they are not as easily transferable to film as, say, Henry V might be?
So I thought As You Like It had the wrong filmmaker the first time because I think he was determined to give his wife the lead role and she didn't speak especially good English. So that became a limitation. I think As You Like It failed for Branagh because it's a play. This is a problem that goes through a lot of the films. It's a play that depends on the very fact that the stage is kind of blank and things are created by metaphor. And everybody thinks, oh, you had a fake Forest of Arden for the play. We can have a real Forest of Arden. That'll be better. But the play depends on the fact that you don't really know. It plays so much on the boundary between what's artificial and what's natural that that actually creates a problem. Even in the Helen Mirren Tempest, the question of how to make Prospero something. On the stage, you just know it's a person, a costume, and you're asked to imagine which way to interpret it. But if they can give you too much, they can give you exactly what they think it looks like, then the play becomes literalized in a way that closes down the audience's imagination.
So who do you think has done kind of the more interesting creative adaptations? I think you're a fan of Coriolanus and also of Julie Taymor's The Tempest, or not so much the latter?
Yeah, Julie Taymor's Tempest was good. It was lively. I thought it was interesting, but it's a play that's wonderful in the theater, and I have yet to see a version on film that I thought absolutely worked. But I think some of the adaptations that people have done creatively with it, you mentioned one. Who do you mention first?
Coriolanus,
right. So there's a play. I can't imagine what the pitch meeting sounded like. This meeting, you know, everybody's nasty. It's just ugly and swarming, and the fights all turn into sort of messy brawls that go nowhere. That's not a play that sounds like it's going to go anywhere. But by taking it in a modern context, but keeping the language active, by setting it in kind of Eastern Europe in a that gives you not the Rome you're supposed to be intimidated by as this grand classical thing, which it really wasn't in Coriolanus's time, but, you know, one of a set of contested city-states and individuals having to find their way through the politics of that. It's extraordinary to me the way that film makes accessible the complexities that Shakespeare wanted to bring out, and also the weird emotional investment you can get, even in characters you dislike.
So there's certainly the plays that you like as movie adaptations. What about your students? What do they look for, and what adaptations do you find are the most popular in the classroom are the same that you find yourself liking?
Yeah, there's a pretty strong correlation, but of course professors always assume that students only think the things they want them to think. But they do come in and they will talk to me about things that they've seen on film, things that they think are wonderful. And I think, speaking of the Hamlets we did before, more recently, the Benedict Cumberbatch Hamlet, the David Tennant Hamlet, I think were both terrific versions of play. In some ways, I think the Olivier really doesn't read for students anymore. But if I'm recommending a version of that, that's what I would say.
Before we take a little break, I want to ask our critics about your favorite Shakespeare adaptations. What come to mind and for what reason?
I'm just thinking of the Baz Luhrmann Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
It was, you know.
I like the Franco Zeffirelli one.
You did like? Yeah. Well, I love the music in that one, of course. And, yeah, there were some iconic moments certainly in that one. But, I give Luhrmann credit for going out on a limb and absolutely reimagining something that was so much embedded in our literary history. So, you know, and of course, West Side Story, another take on Romeo and Juliet.
I liked the 10 Things I Hate About You, sort of obviously the spinoff of Taming of the Shrew, and also Othello. That was, right. Do you remember that one with us, yep, with Julia Stiles? Actually, she was in both of those, so she was making a little career of that. And I did like Joss Whedon's version of Much Ado, yes, About Nothing. I thought that was clever. It was obviously a modern day, but I do like the adaptations, but I, when it comes to Romeo and Juliet, I'm still all about the Zeffirelli version.
You're all about the Zeffirelli. What about you in terms of Romeo and Juliet? How would you score them from your report card, your classroom score?
Right. So, you know, Zeffirelli is fall in love with Romeo and Juliet material. Mm. It's gorgeous. It takes a lot of the edge off. It takes away a lot of the kind of conflicts. But at least it used young enough actors that you could connect to it and find it romantic. When you had, you know, the old version with Leslie Howard and Norma Shearer, and they're both in their mid-30s to mid-40s, that was a little hard to connect to. Baz Luhrmann, I think, is wonderful. It energizes the play without losing the story.
We'll be back in just a minute with more.
Maria. Just met a girl named Maria.
It's Film Week here on 89.3 KPCC. I'm John Horn. I could sing along, but that would create whatever the equivalent is of zero ratings. I'm the host of The Frame. I'm in for Larry Mantle this week, and joining me are Film Week critics Leo Lowenstein and Claudia Puig, as well as UCLA English professor Robert Watson. He's our expert guest as we discuss what makes a good film adaptation of Shakespeare's play. We obviously just heard a little bit from West Side Story. Robert, I want to come back to you about West Side Story, probably the most famous reimagining of Shakespeare's work on screen. Let's talk a little bit about it and then maybe some other standouts that are loose adaptations. West Side Story, the Jets and the Sharks instead of the Capulets and the Montagues.
Yeah, and it was a very clever updating of it, and I think the music's terrific. I think there was an effort to blend kind of high cultural prestige, even with sort of Leonard Bernstein there, to create a kind of accessible musical that still had a certain kind of symphonic glory to it. So it was very captivating for people. It feels a bit dated now, I think, if you try to watch it, even with their assumptions about what cross-cultural tensions are. But I thought it was an interesting project to try to put that into, you know, New York 1950s, and to assume that this could be a kind of allegory for any form of cross-cultural conflict and at the same time invest people with the individual emotions that those characters bring.
And even if it's dated, I think it's soon coming back. Claudia, is that right? Is there potential?
Spielberg is actually working on it right now. But I was going to say, the one thing that I thought is sort of still timely about West Side Story, and this has very little to do with Romeo and Juliet and more to do with current sensibility or sociopolitical climate, is that line that Rita Moreno, you know, when they sing I Like to Be in America, and she says, you know, everything's fine in America if you're a white in America. Mm-hmm. that still resonates. So that's you know, has occasional moments that really hit.
Lael, what about you? Were you a West Side Story fan?
Yes, I certainly recognize its shortcomings, and you know, for the most part, I think the music certainly still holds up, you know, terrific score and
great choreography.
Great choreography, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jerome Robbins, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Check me on that.
You know, I think
the brown face thing was a little problematic.
Yeah, that was a bit, I mean, yeah.
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 So there
love Natalie Wood, but, you know.
Yeah, maybe not buy her as Puerto Rican. No. There are a couple other adaptations that I think listeners might be surprised to learn are based on Shakespeare. My Own Private Idaho, which is inspired by Henry IV and Henry V, and The Lion King, which has some Hamlet in it. And when you think
a lot of Hamlet, actually.
Yeah. But when you think more broadly about how Shakespeare has influenced modern filmmakers, are those good examples or other stories come to mind?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have a whole list of those. I mean, certainly if somebody went to see Joe Macbeth, they wouldn't have trouble figuring out what's going on. But there are moments, things come out of nowhere. I don't know. You remember a film called Burnt by the Sun? It was a Russian film, and it turns out to be a really intense, compelling reading of Hamlet. So if you want to reach for something a little bit afar, that would be one to reach for.
And what about you guys? I mean, do you recognize in those films, My Own Private Idaho or The Lion King, that they are really kind of reworkings of classic stories that Shakespeare, if you believe Shakespeare wrote the plays, actually created?
Well, Shakespeare, I mean, he dealt in such classic themes and in such large themes that, you know, you could probably boil down lots of movies that deal in father-son issues or love or whatever and find some sort of Shakespearean connection. I think, you know, people are so influenced by.
I hadn't thought about the Lion King one until you brought it up,
yeah,
Tom, but it certainly is. I mean, you know.
And that's coming out again.
Yes, it is.
So, Robert, I have a question for you. My favorite Shakespeare play is Twelfth Night. I can't think of a good film version of Twelfth Night. Did I miss it? Didn't
yeah.
happen?
Yeah. There's a pretty good version. I think Adrienne Noble directed I'm forgetting the name of the actress. She played the villainess in the Harry Potter movies.
The Pink Lady?
Yeah, she was in all of the Merchant Ivory films.
Oh, Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, Helena Bonham Carter. Yeah. If you look at that one, I think that one actually works. There's a very melancholic clown in it, but it actually is kind of haunting. And I wanted to throw in a word for one other favorite film adaptation. That's the 1950s science fiction movie Forbidden Planet, which takes off from The Tempest. And I think it's sort of fun in the way an old science fiction movie is fun. But it also has a really intelligent reading of the play, which says that you can't really exercise superhuman power safely if you still have human frailties.
Professor Watson, I have another question for you about young audiences. In the late 90s and early aughts, there were a number of adaptations of Shakespeare that were aimed at younger audiences. Romeo and Juliet, Baz Luhrmann's version, we talked about. 10 Things I Hate About You. There's Get Over It. She's the Man, which is apparently, I've
sort of 12th
Night. Actually, it was cute in its
day. Right.
It was all right, yeah.
But do those movies work in preserving Shakespeare, or are they basically kind of commercial ripoffs that are just taking a good idea that's in public domain?
Yeah, I think sometimes they're kind of reaching out there, as you say, public domain. Also, there's sort of gesture of sort of high culture brought in the way that makes it friendly for people. The studios maybe feel good about that, the same way that Toho felt good about, you know, making a samurai movie of Macbeth into Throne of Blood. But I think in some ways it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for teachers and students to reach across some gaps to each other and begin a conversation about the play, even though that's never a good enough end of the conversation.
And the other thing we haven't really talked about are movies about Shakespeare himself. And there have been some. Shakespeare in Love in 1998, Anonymous in 2011, and this year's All Is True. I can't think of any of those movies. I mean, Shakespeare in Love did win the Best Picture Oscar, somewhat bizarrely. But have there been movies that you think have captured anything about the creative genius of Shakespeare?
No, I think it all falls short for me. I mean, I thought Shakespeare in Love was a nice movie. I thought it worked pretty well. It was that endless quest people have to understand what's behind the genius rather than actually appreciate the plays themselves. But and Gwyneth Paltrow as the dark lady of the sonnet seemed a little bit of an oxymoron. and even the scene at the beginning where he's crumpling up pieces of paper as a traditional way of signaling writer's block was unrealistic in the sense that paper was very expensive in Elizabethan England. But I thought that one worked. Anonymous, I'd almost rather not say anything about because the whole Earl of Oxford thing drives me completely crazy. It was trying to claim that Shakespeare didn't really write Shakespeare. And the movie was a kind of a muddled mess for me on that. So I hope it sinks somewhere deep beneath the waves.
Okay, I'm going to put everybody on the spot a little bit. Not just Shakespeare, but a classic work of literature. I'm going to ask all of you if there's a standout movie, and maybe it's one that's lesser known, based on a great work of literature that you hold near and dear and that you would recommend to people listening. Lael?
I mean, Clueless, you know, based on Emma, the Jane Austen classic. It's still good. Alicia Silverstone still works it, and it's got a young Paul Rudd. It's pretty great.
I liked Cary Fukunaga's Jane Eyre. I thought he did a really good job with it. But my absolute favorite adaptation ever is The Sweet Hereafter, Adam Egoyan's version of Russell Banks's book.
Very good.
Just those two are so great.
Professor Watson, do you have a non-Shakespeare or even a Shakespeare?
No, I've got some non-Shakespeares. I mean, I thought the Orson Welles' Jane Eyre was a great, compelling kind of gothic movie. But the one I'd throw in is a bit of an odd case is Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye, Raymond Chandler. Mm. I found that movie completely fascinating as a sort of a newcomer to L.A., and I'd recommend that for anybody who's curious about it.
I'm going to say Merchant Ivory's Howard's End. That would be
my
pick.
That was great, yeah.
So that is it for Film Week. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle. Thanks so much to our critics this week, L.A. Films Critics Association President Claudia Puig, KPCC Film Week's Leo Lowenstein, and thank you so much to UCLA English professor Robert Watson. Have a great weekend. Larry Mantle returns to host Air Talk on Monday. Thank you again.